Welcome to Soul Up. I'm Kayleen Welsh, your guide to a lighter life. The heat is turned up, the water is boiling, and life is steamy. Or is it dreamy? Are we in the fire or the fog? Whatever is happening, we are feeling the pressure of an eclipse cycle, and the cosmic pot is definitely stirred. The closing lunar eclipse of this eclipse season is happening Tuesday, March 3rd, exact at 5:54 a.m. Central Time. It's not unusual for sensitive people to feel the effects of an eclipse for a few days before as it moves closer to exactitude. So you might be feeling a bit more edgy or antsy, having a hard time settling down, maybe headaches or just feeling a little out of sorts. So for the next several days, be easy. Be gentle with yourself. When energy is heightened, our electrical system responds, and it's easy to slip into overdrive or overwhelm. So as we talk about this eclipse season, I want to begin with a bit of review. It reminds us that this is an ongoing and an emerging story. The planets keep turning, and the Earth keeps revolving around the Sun. The seasons come, and the seasons go. The energies keep flowing, and life, humanity included, continues to revolve and evolve. And it looks like here and there, devolve. So this eclipse cycle started with the solar eclipse, the new moon eclipse on Tuesday, February 17th, at 28 degrees of Aquarius. Always with the new moon, the sun and moon come together. And we recognize that eclipses are considered a cosmic reboot. They are celestial events that evoke major changes and reorientation of activity in terms of the house position that they occupy. So they speak in general about the end of one set of circumstances and the beginning of another. Now, if you have access to your chart, it's really good to take a look and see where these eclipses, where these points are landing in your chart. Which house are they impacting? In the natural wheel, the natural chart, which reflects the seasonal round that we experience here on Earth, the February 17th solar eclipse occurred in the 11th house. That's the house that's connected to the archetypal energy of Aquarius. So it's future-oriented, innovative, humanitarian. It's diverse and out of the box. Placed alongside the sun and moon, in emphasis and solidarity, were Pluto, which is about transformation, the part of fortune, which is a point of grace and the most favorable point in a chart, Vesta, our deep cosmic awareness, and Mars, representing masculine energy and motivation. That's a lot of energy focusing us toward an expanded way of life, one that is inclusive, community and globally oriented, and really brilliant as new ideas and innovative strategies come along and bring great change. A new moon, it laid the groundwork for the cycle. It was the seed. The next day, the sun moved into Pisces, adding conscious elements of compassion and greater light to the vision of the future that it wants to make real. When you look at the image of the astrology chart, it appears to be a stand of solidarity from Aquarius through Pisces and crossing the threshold into new expression into Aries. This is where all emerges. The new comes into the light. It looks like a gathering of the cosmic high command as all of these energetic representations of aspects of our humanity join together with one voice. In addition to the group in Aquarius and connecting the combined energy with the North Node in Pisces are Mercury, Venus, and Pallas Athene. This eclipse was a call forward. Simply put, a call forward into awareness, feminine energy, and wisdom. Since then, so since February 17th, we've been in this liminal space as the eclipse energy continues to swirl and there has been some significant shifting around. Mars came into square with Uranus on Friday, February 27th, setting off literal explosions on Saturday morning. Martial energy met the lightning bolt in shadow expression of these two powerful forces and became detonation. Human lives were taken, and a movement toward war is devolution. It's doing the same thing we've always done and perpetuates a power system that lends itself toward destruction. This Mars-Uranus square raises the question, are we going with the old or is it time for something new? Can we really do something new? It creates a conflict between the martial military mindset and the revolutionary energy calling for a new way. Mars moves into Pisces tomorrow, Monday, March 2nd, which I anticipate will water down the heat. At least we can hope so. You know, we don't need World War III. In wellness circles, it is said that doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity. Yet this seems to be where humanity has gotten stuck. Used in highest expression, Mars and Uranus together can be powerful impetus for creating a more humanitarian world. This is our task, not war, a new future, one that is safe and peaceful for all people. I'm not sure how we get it from a government that has functioned under a different paradigm for a very long time, other than it becomes a task of the people. Of course, it's supposed to be a government by and for the people, and that is obviously not the case. The new moon solar eclipse in Aquarius reminded us that the power lies with the people, and we've got some things to figure out. As we sit in this liminal space between eclipses, Mercury has gone retrograde. So it's an appearance of moving backward, and it definitely brings up some things to reconsider, review, and release. So it went retrograde on February 26th at 22 degrees of Pisces. Mercury is our connection point, the messenger between the gods and the underworld, or we could say heaven and hell. It carries extra import as the ruler of Virgo, where the moon and the south node sit in opposition to the powerhouse of energy on the other side of the wheel. Mercury is coming back over some pieces that need a little more attention, giving us an opportunity to refine and hone some of the information we've been taking in, to adjust and resettle our system around new energetic restructuring. This is the evolution into higher consciousness. Mercury retrograde gives us some space to slow things down, to be a little more deliberate, to pay attention, and really notice what comes up in our connections, our ideas, conversations, our information intake and outgo. Mercury retrograde invites us to turn down the noise and feel into it. Maybe we can recognize things from a different viewpoint. You know, for example, maybe for Facebook than we did before, or our reaction to social media. Maybe that we have some new awareness and that shifts. Or maybe we recognize, you know, a need to really expand our news sources or to figure out what we need to do to get more accurate information about what's going on in the world. Or maybe it brings some kind of insight. We gain insight into some part of a communication dynamic that is causing difficulty in a relationship. Mercury retrograde will give us a chance for something to come into our awareness that we can use to help us move forward. Pay attention. This is the import of Mercury retrograde, to bring information to the surface that's been lying just underneath our level of awareness, to remind us about the things we do or don't do that we pretend not to know, and yet that if we don't address, they will grow, become larger, and eventually erupt with a universal 2x4. Mercury will move back to 8 degrees Pisces, interestingly enough, the point where the North Node sat for these eclipses. Before stationing direct on March 20th, the day of spring equinox, when the sun crosses the line of the horizon to emerge in new form at 0 degrees Aries. Mercury will remain in shadow until it reaches again back to the place where it started its retrograde motion, so when it gets back to 22 degrees of Pisces on April 9th, just a few days after Easter. The pieces of these energetic puzzles affirm each other. They fit into common themes and recurring messages. And now we are coming to the closing piece of this eclipse cycle. Eclipses typically come in pairs. So as I said, we had the first one February 17th, and this coming Tuesday, March 3rd, we will have a lunar eclipse. It's the full moon of the Pisces cycle. So the sun is in Pisces and the moon will be in Virgo, in a position of opposition. This position requires a relinquishing and an embracing as a more balanced embodiment is sought. While they appear to be facing off, just kind of battle language, the two are actually hidden helpers to each other. They help to stretch, expand, and integrate new understanding. Energetically, a lunar eclipse guides us to transcend negative patterns, old beliefs within the shadow self. It's a time to eclipse anything that may be holding you back. With the sun at 12 degrees Pisces, still flanked by a whole team of supporters, the moon sits on the opposite side of the chart at 12 degrees Virgo, virtually alone except for the south node. Pisces is the sign that connects us to the source, the great unknown, the divine mystery. It reminds us of the intangible valuables of life, compassion, joy, faith, imagination, eternity. Its ruler, Neptune, the planet of spiritualization and mystery, recently crossed the line of horizon, the ascendant, to start a brand new 165-plus-year cycle. It brings mystery into new form, into more cohesive life with and through humanity. The Virgo full moon, in opposition, is shining a light on areas where we may feel inadequate or unworthy. It can help us to see what habits and routines we have that are life detracting rather than life enhancing. On its not so good days, Virgo energy can feel burdensome and heavy. It can call into blame and victimhood and wonder why it tries so hard. And yet at its core, Virgo energy always wants to make things better. So it can help us to fine tune, to make something work a little better, something that will be of better service. It is the energy of the master craftsman with their patience, dedication, and ability to discern where the flaws lie. Overall, Virgo wants to bring heaven to earth, to make heaven real. The nodes are super important, as it is their movement across the ecliptic that sets up eclipses. They're said to represent our historic path, where we've come from, and where we're going. The south node, which is partnering up in Virgo with the moon for this lunar eclipse, represents our comfort zone. It's where we have qualities that have come to hinder rather than enhance our well-being. And a big part of this is old programming around fear, worthiness, and a defeatist victim-blame loop that runs deep. With the eclipse on the south node, we are to ask ourselves, what needs to go? What ideas, behaviors, traditions, blocks need to be reconsidered, stretched, and revitalized? The south node is a powerful addition to the illumination that comes with Tuesday's full moon. Together, they are bringing to light areas where we are to grow, supporting us to let go of habits and stuck patterns, to lean into inspiration and intuition, and to revitalize the Virgo archetype within us, an energy of service, manifestation, and purity. We talked last episode about the ominous reputation of eclipses, and I raised the question of whether that is a reflection of the fear that humanity has lived with for so long. When we live with fear for a long time, and humanity certainly has, we experience cognitive distress and develop subtle and pervasive coping strategies to alleviate the discomfort. When the coping strategy settles into our subconscious and impacts our neural structure, it becomes a reaction, quickly coming to the surface when triggered. Usually, as a fear reaction, it's not the most helpful, often actually causing more distress than the situation that activated it. A coping strategy that I see a lot of, and that is an important one for all of us to release, is a pattern called awfulizing. Awfulizing is a psychological term coined by Dr. Albert Ellis, the founder of Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy. It refers to a habit of evaluating a negative situation in the worst possible light and getting wrapped up in it, projecting it onto some terrible imagined future outcome. With this mindset, you don't just see a problem as inconvenient or tragic or momentary. You see it as an overwhelming catastrophe that is going to bring some awful, insurmountable consequences. We see this reaction frequently in our daily conversations around everything from world events to the weather. And it's become a given on social media posts. I mean, whatever you post is going to offend someone who proceeds to tell you what a horrible human being you are or how stupid you are to say such a thing. We see this awfulizing around health diagnoses and it kind of like under this illusion of care with repeated conversations that ask, how are you doing? The focus and the emphasis ends up being on the disease rather than the person. So I've been thinking a lot about this. What is this tendency within the human being to awfulize, to make things worse than they even really are? Is it some kind of protection if we, you know, anticipate the worst, somehow feels better when it happens? Is it boredom? Are we, you know, having mundane lives where really nothing's happening, so we need to like drama things up and make it big? Maybe it's our acclimation to reality TV. I mean, we've gotten used to seeing life on screen that's big and dramatic. Maybe it's, you know, a need for attention or to make an impact or to feel like we're bringing some energy to something. But as I said before, most of the time it is a behavior strategy that ends up backfiring and causing us more difficulty. In fact, right now, I mean, it keeps us stuck. You know, this tendency to awfulize keeps us caught in a fear-based loop, and it's not helpful. So I would like to share some ideas on how to shift this toward a more rational, less fear-based perspective. I mean, it feels real when it hits. When something hard happens, we can easily just react. So our challenge becomes to consciously do something different. So here's a couple of ideas. When we shift into a more rational, less fear-based perspective, we can keep in mind assessment, action, and acceptance. Here's a couple of ideas. One idea is to use what's called a badness scale. So something happens, you rate the event on a scale of 0 to 100. Realize that while an event might be, you know, 80% bad or 90% bad, it is rarely infinity or 100% bad. Here's an example. If you had a loved one in Mexico and you hear of a problem there, you might initially react with a fear response and feel like it's a 90% bad level. And you can spin into fear, or you can stop, take a breath, and assess. Is there anything you can do to decrease that number or your fear? If so, do that. You know, here's some ideas. Call your person. You could seek accurate information. You could look at a map to make sure that you have a good geographical perspective. Do some of these things and then check the badness scale again. Has it shifted? Is there any other action you can take? If so, take it. If not, from there comes acceptance. Accept until new information comes in, at which time again you can assess take action, and then come into acceptance. There does come a place where there is nothing that we can really do to help a situation, and that requires a place of acceptance. Another strategy for awfulizing, when awfulizing hits or you have this urge to like share this tragic information, project into time. You know, imagine yourself a year from now or 5 years from now or somewhere in the future, because this really helps like unfreeze our brain from the event and reminds us that life continues beyond whatever crisis is occurring. So take a breath and acknowledge that, yes, it sucks now, and you'll get through. Yes, your car is totaled, and you have no transportation right now. Instead of constricting in fear, open to possibility. Consider the possibility that the universe ultimately works in your favor. Maybe you'll end up getting some good travel time in with someone who offered you a ride, or you find a car that you like even better. Another strategy to reduce awfulizing is just to be alert to your language. Watch your language. Be aware of how you're speaking about what you're going through. Now replace "this is awful and I don't know how I'll ever get past this" with "this is really difficult and I hope I'm able to get through it." Use feeling words. Use forward-moving words. Acknowledge, "this makes me so sad," or "dang, life is hard sometimes." Pay attention to how much you speak about difficult events and the language you use in doing so. Be aware of casting yourself as a victim, the one who always has bad things happen or never has things go well. And when something difficult hits, allow space to process. Allow yourself the room to feel bad about the situation that arises. Fear and the energy it brings needs to go somewhere. It's energy in motion. So venting, talking to a supportive other, or journaling can help to get it out. You can scream into the page, "OMG, I can't believe this is happening." It's really helpful to get past the energy buildup. When my life was in a really messy place some years ago, my friend Dinah would say to me, "I'll give you 15 minutes. After that, we're moving on." She called it my pity pot. As we move on, we can turn our focus to active coping. Assessment, action, acceptance. We need to up our stress management and emotional regulation skills. If we can practice for smaller incidents or everyday stressors, we will be better prepared when the big stressors hit. Even if it is as simple as helping your body learn to soften and breathe deeper, muscle memory will help you when your fear buttons get poked and the urge to react with awfulizing hits. For this lunar eclipse on Tuesday, Ceres, the Great Mother, joins Chiron and Eris in Aries, a pairing that has been in conjunction for some time. Chiron, reflecting the process of wounding and healing that is the human condition, and Eris, the disruptor, who wants all to have a place of belonging and safety. Ceres joins them to emphasize the importance of care and nurturing as we go through times of significant change. Without such care, for ourselves as well as others, we can easily be pulled down into lower vibration, reactionary states. Self-care can show up in numerous ways. Essentially, it is tuning into and tending to self in a way that lifts up rather than tears down. Ceres reminds us to be aware of the subtle ways we put ourselves last. Don't listen to the messages of our body or diminish ourselves with unfair and harsh judgments. I feel a need to reassert, you know, hang on, we are in for a ride. This is the year of the fire horse, and it's not just the beginning of the year, it's going to be all year. The old is going away, and the new is coming in hot. There are so many upset and discombobulated mindsets as the inherent discord of who we are on the inside and who the world is telling us we are attempt to reconcile. It's not sustainable. Integrity is aligning in our system as we come into higher consciousness. And where there is disruption, there's going to be fallout. We are being infused, supported, to see ourselves as a more cohesive whole, individually and collectively. And with that awareness comes new action. Uranus is going to be moving into Gemini in April, the end of April. And that is going to blast this consciousness adjustment that we're experiencing to a whole nother plane. Right now, this is preparation time. I wish I could say where we are going with some factual data or some brilliant, omniscient view. We seem to move ever closer and closer to a tipping point. And yet maybe that's like hitting bottom. Where is the bottom or the tip? I think the message of these eclipses are clear. Clean up your act. Act like the kind people you say you are. Change is required. Release any idea that you are better or worse than anyone else. We all just got a different story. Underneath skin colors and cultural variations are the roots of one human family. We can't sit in blame or victimization. We have to move into discipline and hold our own self accountable as we move into personal accountability. Who knows how long the effects of an eclipse last? Some say 6 months. Some talk about the bigger cycles that reflect a change from which we can't go back. I ask, let's get off the merry-go-round of insanity and do something different. If we each do our part the best we are able, maybe we will reach that tipping point and see more clearly the Piscean vision of a world infused with Christ consciousness and a recognition of humanity's place in the greater mystery that is life. Until next time, shine on.
Oh my goodness gracious, beautiful oasis with that voice sweet as honey. Birdie in the air, nothing can compare. You're worth more than the whole world's money. Just to hear that sweet voice even brings the bees joy. Pour it on me warm, sweet honey. Every word you say, if you sing it in that way, yeah, you can make a gray sky sunny. Ooh. me warm, sweet honey.